PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to a brand new episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me this week is Mr. Jason Finley, once again from Callaway and Odyssey Golf. How are you, Jason?
I'm great. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Hey, I'm on your Twitter a little bit here, and you're not really blowing up the Twitter spot. Are you losing interest in social media?
I would say it ebbs and flows a little bit. I think, obviously certain times of the year, I get a little more active in certain social environments than others. I would say this time of year is pretty tough for us in terms of, you know, making sure that everything's good for this year's product launches and then thinking about, you know, next year and planning through that. So, lot going on, I guess. So, you know, it makes for a little less time doing some of that kind of stuff, but I still pay attention. Let's just say that I may not just be as active.
I do see you getting tormented a little bit on there from a couple folks, depending. It seems like anything that has to do with a golf ball pretty much just goes your way now. Is that pretty fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I'll drop a little snark in there every once in a while. And I think the amount my quota of number of tweets that I don't send I actually type out is much higher than those that I actually do send.
Yeah, I remember back in college with social media thinking there needed to be some like unlocking feature to drunk post or not. But it's obviously different here.
Or just am I gonna offend if I say this? But that can be a little dark at times. So
that's Jason Finley CG on Twitter. If you don't follow him already, I mean, obviously he's got a pretty solid following, but I saw a conversation going on with you somehow intertwined into it of an older Chrome Soft model that had some sweet Odyssey swoosh logos on it. I think it swoosh had the number, the Odyssey logo. Like a whirlwind, right?
We would call that a swirl, not a swoosh.
A swirl, swoosh, swirl. That's swoosh, right. What have I done to you? But they're not in golf, so it's fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it said 1991 on it, and you're kind of teasing that it was one of the early on iterations you guys put through. Is that true?
Yeah, so it was one of the early samples we did kind of when we started to showcase the kind of custom capabilities, right, of, you know, player number, i.e. year that it was founded, logos within our brand, obviously, with and without Pentagon. So it was kind of in that early stage. I don't know where they ended up. I'm guessing that the fact that Verska found it on a golf course, it was probably here locally and someone that, you know, was around the office at some point and saw it and got it. So I'm guessing that's what it was, but there's not too many of those ones around.
So, you know, obviously there was value in Truvis when it came out. The idea was, you know, soccer ball, the associations, the kind of looks bigger to the eye and things like that. And did you not find enough utility in this? It was almost like a cosmetic change to put on the swirl logo, if you will, instead of something more Truvis-y. Is that why you kind of walked away from that idea?
No, I think it's just more than anything, you know, it's like I've said to everybody, right? There's a million different ideas that we could do on a Truvis pattern, let's call it. And I mean, you've been in my office, you see the example of my wall that was like the first 300 we did. And there's a whole underground world out there of Truvis collectors too, that, you know, that there's all kinds of different things we could do. And some people say that this looks good. Some people say that that looks good. You have people that have tattoos of the Odyssey swirl, so they're going to love that, obviously. So, I mean, everybody says they would buy a bunch of them, whatever we do. So we know that if we had an unlimited supply of them and we came out with ideas every month, we would sell them.
I saw a quote of I'll buy 1,000 of them. And, but it all tied back to your cost center. So I don't know how that worked out.
Yeah. Well, and it's pretty easy to say that when you're just typing away on Twitter too. So,
yeah. That's funny.
That's why I said, where should I send the invoice? Mm-hmm. Little different, when you got to pull out the wallet.
So when it comes to some of the limited run stuff you're doing, like obviously we've seen some really cool things from, the Arnold Palmer is a good example. Had some really cool ones, the umbrella logo. Mm-hmm. Will you always sort of lean into that Truvis style now? Is that kind of your window? Is it, are you going to make that decision first? And then if it absolutely comes to it, go away from that into a less unique design?
I think that's our goal. But, you know, really, those have been less frequent than we would have liked. And that's primarily just because of demand on the regular inline balls, right? So to do limited drops when we can't keep up with demand of the regular inline balls, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, right? To be doing that kind of stuff at the same time. So we want to do more of it. We just, you know, we're not to the place yet where it makes business sense to be doing that.
You know, one of the many machines you were laughed at for originally purchasing. Yeah, I got that.
Yeah.
solid flex there.
Yeah.
When it comes to Truvis, you have obviously improved over the years, I'm sure, just as anything would be. Tell me about durability of the colorations that are on there. Has it gotten stronger over the years? Has it changed at all, or has it been pretty consistent?
It's been pretty consistent over the years, and you know, we haven't seen any real durability challenges because it's underneath the clear coat, right? So it's finished, if you will, and painted with the clear coat after the Truvis pattern is applied. So it's just the same. It's the same as like a logo or a side stamp would be, to where, you know, that stuff's, we don't really have any durability concerns with that stuff at all.
That's great. And I want to go into triple track, as we often do, since you know, you're one of my preferred guests at this point on the show. Don't tell anyone that though. One of my favorite things to do is to send you pictures of golf balls that aren't yours that have a sort of triple track-esque presentation on there. I still owe you one. There's someone had gotten into the custom logo and put what looked like little triangle or little diamonds with three lines of them on the outside of the ball. So that was pretty cute. But there's some of the more like, you know, at home custom runs where they're doing it with their own Sharpies.
Yeah.
You have to laugh when you see things like that, right? You have to think like, why are people working so hard to use our technology, but not in our product?
Yeah. Well, especially when you know that you make the best ball in golf. So it makes it even, you know, more crazy that they would play an inferior product and an inferior track design, but sorry, that's another flex, but you know, I think it is kind of funny to see it. And, you know, from somebody that when we first started working on the idea before we had the capabilities of the production, if you will, of it, when I had to show it to people around the office, like conceptually, right, I was doing that. And it's a total pain. And let's just say my frequency of good balls to bad balls was not very good. So there's a few maybe in my backyard here that get hit around a little bit of some of the early samples of my bad craftsmanship there. But it's not easy to do. So I give them credit for taking the effort at least.
Yeah, I noticed the squiggliness is typically the biggest concern, right? Because you don't want to look down at what appears to be an earthquake on top of a, you know, a waffle cone. So.
Well, but that's even hard on, you know, I mean, it's not trivial to print straight lines on a round object, right? That also has a geometrical pattern in the hex pattern for us on the golf ball, right? And maybe round dimples for others, but it's not trivial, particularly when you start doing it with a Sharpie.
So tell me a little bit. I'm already leaving what I wanted to. I have more questions about triple track for you, but why the investment on hex? Why is it such a big deal for you guys? Why not toe the lines of the original standard, which is always that circular consideration?
Well, I mean, it goes back probably till, you know, the early 2000s when we did that, probably early to mid 2000s. And, you know, give a lot of credit to Steve Ogg, who worked with us at the time and, you know, had a pretty strong aerodynamics background coming from Boeing and the team. And he came up with that pattern. And what we continue to hear is, you know, more about the consistency that pattern provides in crosswinds and things like that. So we think it's a pretty strong competitive advantage for us. And, you know, it's evolved through the years in terms of shapes and sizes and numbers and, you know, things like that. But we definitely believe pretty strongly in that being one of our core technologies. And I kind of laugh sometimes when we're working on like the features and benefits of the product, because it's almost like assumed that we have that now. Like it doesn't find its way into the bullet points, if you will, very often, because it's just kind of our thing, right? So I think it's almost expected from us that we have it.
So when you see something like that, and it's almost like that comfort level of just knowing that it's functional and performing at peak levels, how much do you then challenge that and say, are we overlooking some new technology or some new concepts that we're not focusing on? Is there ever that thought, like maybe we do need to dig back into that and see if there's more that we can get out of it?
Oh yeah. I think that falls right in line with everything we do from a product perspective, right? Of challenging what we do, how we do it, what we make it with, you know, so I'd put it in the same vein of materials and things like that. So there's definitely a lot of work, and, you know, I don't want to overly simplify what we've done with Hex Aerodynamics. I mean, if you look at even the Chrome Soft line, every single one of those balls has a different aerodynamic pattern than the other, right? So Chrome Soft's different than LS, which is different from X, because of what we're trying to, you know, accomplish with that golf ball. So it's not like, you know, it's one size fits all for Hex Aerodynamics. There's different things we're trying to accomplish, whether it's different lift and drag characteristics, different, you know, flight characteristics, you know, all that. So it's definitely an evolving process, model by model, for sure.
So then I'm going to ask a sort of stacking question on that. When you do start to mess with those arrows, does that almost introduce to you the potential for a new line when you talk about the differences between the three? I mean, obviously there's more going on than just the outer presentation or even the inner cores, but does it open the door for things like, oh wow, maybe we've got something here, and that turns into LS or it turns into Chrome Soft X eventually?
Yep, absolutely. And there's different, I would say, aero or flight patterns that you can accomplish. Even if you did, let's just say, a Chrome Soft X with a completely different pattern to it, you could get a completely different performing golf ball. And this is why I tell people all the time, it's so important with golf ball fitting, if you will. It's not as simple as drivers, right? Where you can't just walk in and hit them into the tech studio in Nashville there and get an idea of what ball's right for you, because I could give you a Chrome Soft X, a ball that says Chrome Soft X that has two completely different aero patterns, and it would have the same launch conditions, and you would never know what the difference was when you got it out on the golf course. So, you know, that's really important to thinking about getting out and actually playing golf with the ball. It's a great starting point to kind of narrow it down, but, you know, you always want to have that on course kind of watching the ball fly experience, because you can get completely different results just based on the aero pattern of the golf ball.
Well, so what is that like for you when you get out in the golf course and you're playing with people who genuinely don't care what ball they have in play? And now I'm assuming most of the guys who know you know enough to at least put Callaway balls in play, but, you know, when they're just grabbing in and maybe they grab a super soft and they lose that, and the next one they pull out is a Chrome Soft X. And it's like, is that one of your biggest pet peeves out there from a what other people use perspective?
I would say in general, I mean, I'm probably as guilty of this as anyone. But I would say that for the everyday golfer, the importance of playing the same ball is really important, right? Because the whole point of us playing this game is to be good, right? And to shoot lower scores.
For some of us, yeah.
And be better, right? But when you're changing balls, right, when you're doing the example you just mentioned, you couldn't find more different golf balls than Super Soft and Chrome Soft X.
Yeah.
If you play a Super Soft on one hole and Chrome Soft X on another hole, well, you're just bringing variability into your game. So you're not going to get better. So now, am I guilty of that? Kind of, but that's kind of part of my job, right? So, and I'm not as, other than a couple times a year, I'm not super competitive with my game anymore. So, I mean, I do a lot of that. I mean, it's not uncommon that I'm playing a prototype ball if I do get the chance to go out and play.
So is that out of pure educational or research perspective, or is that like you want to just see how other things work, or you just genuinely don't care which ball you have in play?
I think it's a little bit of all of that. I think it's less of, I don't care which ball I have in play. I know what I'm going to play if I go out and play a competitive round of golf. I know what it will be. But if, you know, I want to know what the competitors are doing. I want to know kind of what, if we're talking about, I have a senior management meeting tomorrow, right, where we're making kind of final recommendations on 2023 product. And I want to be comfortable in what I'm recommending to that group, right, and why. So, you know, it's one thing to see data and test results on a piece of paper, but to go out and experience it for yourself, I think means a lot to me, at least.
So I like that because it's a bit of an old school mentality, right? We've seen the older tour players say, like Freddie Couples is a good example. He said he doesn't want to see numbers at all. He relies on presentation, the way the ball shapes and whatever it is off his club head. So do you feel like that perspective is bridging the gap between two eras in perspective altogether in golf, and especially when it comes to design? Or is there still an understanding there that we need to see both sides of it to have a successful product?
I think it's both, right? It's both sides. And I mean, I grew up in this business, and I started right back in the day when we actually did player testing for every single thing that we did. And it was a very iterative process, right? Like we'd prototype a club or a ball, test it, refine it, do it again, you know, over and over and over again. And it's not nearly, you know, so much more of it is done, you know, through AI or virtual capabilities now. Even what we do with going back to the aerodynamics, right? We can do so much of that virtually now, but it's still like almost like a qualification or verification of that is still really important for us.
So for your bag, is it XLS or is it ChromeSoft X?
XLS.
Okay. With triple track?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't go with it.
I think triple track's fascinating. I have a question from your perspective, not just from Jason the Callaway guy.
Yeah.
Do you see value in purely using triple track for practice, regardless of whether you put it in play on the golf course?
I guess. I think that I would tell you that you should be using the ball that you're going to use in play to practice with, but in the case of like XLS, you could practice with triple track and play a white ball.
Yeah.
But I don't know why, if you think it's good for you in the practice environment, why wouldn't it be good for you on the golf course?
Yeah. I think so. This was an interesting conversation I had with a playing partner just this past weekend. He doesn't necessarily use the triple track, and he had put it in play just for a couple holes and tried to use it on the green, and it's confidence, right? You eventually gain confidence in what you line up, but we as golfers, our brains convince ourselves that we're seeing something different. So as soon as you line the ball up and you get on top of it with your putter, well, you know, years of you not seeing that there is going to convince you otherwise, right? So now certainly time to practice to put it into play is very valuable. But I was always wondering, between that and like, if you just genuinely are the type of person where you have to see or not see something, and then you just get so in your own head where you can't deal with it on the golf course, whereas on the putting green, you might use a line already. You might use all these alternatives for alignment to support, like, my putter face is lined up where it's supposed to be, as opposed to slightly open, pointing at my own dumb head here.
Well, and guys do that, right? Like John Rahm, we've made like a 360 single line golf ball for him to use that he only practices with. He doesn't use it on the golf course because he doesn't want to get that technical on the golf course, but he wants to use it for practicing. So
interesting.
You know, some of the best players in the world are doing it. It can't be too flawed, you know, but in my, you know, we're none of us that are watching this podcast, no offense to anybody here, are as good as John Rahm. So
I'm offended.
Well, you should be. But I think that there's benefit to practicing with what you play with.
So did we just hear about a 2023 product? Full circle ChromeSoft XLS?
No, I told you we made some for him. That was it.
Yeah. You heard it here, folks. Yeah. That's interesting. So
I didn't say that they weren't done with the Sharpie in my office, but.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean,
I didn't tell you how we made that.
Yeah. So let's talk John Rahm, because I feel like every time the discussion of Rahm comes up, and especially when it's associated with Callaway, it all kind of started with the golf ball. There was an rumors, and you don't need to admit to anything, that he wasn't happy, and Kromsoff solved a lot of those issues for him. Now he's obviously showcased his ability with Kromsoft and the rest of your Callaway lineup, but you know, what are we looking at this year with his play? Obviously he's into Kromsoft, but is he making some changes, some subtle differences that have helped him win just this past week?
I mean, I think, you know, he's a Kromsoft X guy, and he likes that spin profile and ball because, you know, I always use this analogy of last year, you know, he won the U.S. Open with Kromsoft X and Xander won the gold medal with XLS, and they're both high spin players, right? But John Rahm is the guy that he wants to take spin off of it himself. He wants to be in control of that. And he wants the maximum amount of spin. And you're right. That was one of the big things when he came over and first started testing our product. It started with golf ball, and it was like, hey, boys, I think we got something here, right? We were able to provide him something pretty quickly that he was a big fan of, and that was Kromsoft X. But, you know, he wants to be able to take that spin off, whereas like Xander wants the golf ball to do it for him, right? He wants to hit the same kind of stock shot around the golf course. So it's just different playing styles more than anything else. But, you know, guys that are kind of the same bucket, if you will, high speed, high spin, world-class players, you know, it still matters to them to do that. So
listen, you already said that Rahm was better than we are. You don't have to point out why. Okay. Cause that's not nice. I'm in the Xander camp in a big way. Kill that spin for me, buddy.
Yeah. Well, and I am too, right? But we also, I mean, you have more speed than I do, but you don't have the speed that John and Xander have. And, you know, outside of a few tour pros, I've yet to find the golfer that's told me that they want to hit the ball shorter.
Yeah, true. Well, yeah, it blows my mind, his ability to create the kind of speed he does with the length of his swing to begin with. But yeah, it's been really fun seeing him come back. Obviously a big win recently, but that's not the only story from Callaway. You guys have players winning left and right. I mean, it's kind of funny. Like the depth of your field is being showcased week after week. has it been pretty fun around the office just enjoying that? It certainly seems like from the floor to swing on.
Yeah. I mean, it is fun. I think if you talk to a few on our design team and guys like Ethan that have to then work on Sundays, if we get wins, cause they're working on creating win ads, they don't necessarily love it as much. And our social team's been a little busier, but I mean, we're still really excited about it and happy for our guys. Right. And, you know, we go to work every day to help make golfers better and to see the best in the world showcasing those abilities and those products that we work on every single day to have, you know, life-changing winning moments on tours is pretty exciting for us. So it's exciting. It's great. It's fun all at the same time, but it actually creates more work for us at the same time.
Yeah. Is there a guy you're most excited about? I know obviously you're rooting for them all, but was there a guy that won that you're really, really excited for this year?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, you always have, you know, we joke about it. If we have multiple kids, we always will tell you that we don't have kids. We all do, right? In reality, but, and I think it ebbs and flows a little bit, right? Like, you know, both Xander and Rahm, I would put in kind of the same camp, Rahm a little bit less, but, you know, for as good as they are and as good of a run as they've been on in terms of high quality finishes, they haven't really gotten those W's. I mean, Rahm hadn't won since the U.S. Open. It had been longer than that for Xander. So to see that has been great, to see like the improvement for, you know, guy like Pablo Larrazábal winning on the European Tour or whatever they call it now, you know, is exciting and great all at the same time. So, yeah, I mean, they all have their different reasons to get excited about it.
Okay. Well, tell me about your what's in the bag right now. Have you got anything new in there?
Well, we start at the top. I've got, and this is highly under debate at the moment. I got a member guest coming up in a couple weeks, so I got to make some decisions here in a few weeks. But right now, I have a triple diamond Max LS driver, 9 degree with a Ventus red. If you want to get really detailed, I have an Epic, or not Epic, yeah. Rogue ST LS 3HL in my 3-1. I have a UW 19 degree and a Rogue ST Pro 4H. And then this part is not open for debate currently. I have Rogue Pro irons in my 5 through A wedge, and then Jaws wedges in the,
and those are locked in, are they?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Those are in. And then putter is a crankneck Chicago Toulon. Fairly locked in.
Love it. I put a Toulon in the bag this year. I found a long neck, which are surprisingly challenging to come by.
Yep.
And I'm having a blast with it. It's been really, really fun. So I do want to say that's a sweet sounding bag. The only thing I don't like is I have an Epic Super Hybrid in my bag, and I've got it cranked down to like 16 or 15 degrees, and it is a banger, Finley.
Yeah. No, I like that. I've said this to a couple people. I think that Apex UW for me is the best golf club I've ever played in my time at Callaway.
Really?
Yeah. And I've played a few, going on 25 years now. So I think it's unbelievable. So that would be the spot in the bag that would go. I did have two. I had one at one point, to your point there. I had a 17 that I had bent down to 16 and made it like a half an inch longer. So it kind of did the same exact thing. But I like that 3-wood a little bit better, I think.
Okay. Yeah, it's fun to be picky a little bit. I appreciate that. Yeah. But I thought we could be epic bros, and it sounds like we're not. It really breaks my heart. You know that?
Well, the good news is when we have like 14 hybrids in our line, that there's plenty of options to go around.
Oh, man. Do you want to actually, I have some non-golf topics I want to hit with you, and then we'll jump back to a couple final questions. Going through your Twitter, there was a comment on there talking about the challenges of being a San Diego sports fan. Yeah. Has that improved at all? Because it's been a minute since you said that.
No, I'm sitting here, I'm working at home today, and I have the Padre game on in the background. And I mean, they're doing okay now, but it's almost just like, okay, how they're playing your Guardians. But by the way, I mean, is that not the stupidest transition that you've ever seen?
I don't identify as a Guardian. I identify as a Blue Jay. So
what? Well, yeah, they're Toronto, in your state, man. At least.
Toronto, man. I grew up when I was.
I know you're not taking credit for the Reds because they're awful.
Oh, they're big bad. So my 6-year-old is getting really into baseball and basketball. So it sounds like I'm a Bengals fan, so I'm told. But I still have hope that we can talk him out of a Reds or Cavaliers assignment. We'll see what happens. Who knows? But I grew up with Joe Carter and the Blue Jays. 1990, man. That was like my childhood. So he's gonna have to dig deep to get me out of that one.
Okay. Yeah, so. No, but being a San Diego sports fan, it's tough sledding, right? I mean, luckily, I grew up, I was a soccer player, and there's a, you know, indoor soccer team here that my family had season tickets to when I was a kid. And it's probably the winningest sports franchise that nobody knows about in the world. I think they won like 9 out of 10 years, they won the championship. But other than that, and nobody knows about it, right? But other than that, I mean, the Padres have been to the World Series twice, never won. San Diego State somehow manages to lose a heartbreaker every year. Chargers left, and they're still, I mean, they were the like the most brutal team to watch to begin with. Now it's almost entertaining to not be a Charger fan and watch, because it's like Hollywood entertainment, right? It definitely fits where they go. Like, how are they going to screw this up now? So I enjoy watching that and rooting for whoever's playing the Chargers. But yeah, I mean, it's not a fun deal to be a San Diego sports fan.
Listen, you get perfect weather all year long. You can't have everything, okay?
That's fair. That's very fair.
I saw you took your son to March Madness game. What was that like?
Yeah, I there was the games in San Diego. So I actually took both of them. I have two boys, both, I guess now I would say, used to play basketball. I have one that played all 4 years in high school and is a freshman in college now. So other than his pickup games, one of which he was playing last night and got beat up pretty good. He sent me a picture of his injury from his pickup game last night. But both of them used to play basketball in high school. So they both are, you know, big basketball fans. It was fun. It was great. You know, we went to two games, and it was, you know, my one son was home for spring break. So it was kind of a cool thing to do with both of them. And just a cool experience in general. So, it was definitely fun and something I'm glad we got to go do and I got to do with them.
So the crowds there, I mean, you've obviously experienced a number of different sporting events, it sounds yep. like, but, what was the crowd like at a March Madness game? Was it crazy?
It was interesting because, you know, we went to two games. So the first game was, I think it was Notre Dame and, I forget who it was.
I know who won.
Yeah. And then the second game was Arizona and Texas Tech.
Okay.
But so each game, you know, there was more fans from those schools. Or no, sorry, it was Notre Dame and Texas Tech, and then Arizona and TCU is what it was.
Gotcha.
So, you know, there was the fans for each game. So after the first game, kind of, I would say half the Notre Dame fans left, so they got a little more quiet. But I mean, the Arizona fans in particular, because it's closer, right, traveled pretty well, so it was pretty vibrant in there from them. But I would say, you know, half plus of the crowd was rooting for a school at least.
Okay.
And then kind of the rest were just kind of there, like we were, you know, no vested interest really.
So do you have a sporting experience that was basically tops from all others then?
I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, that was cool to see. You know, I've been to a bunch of, like, you know, back in the day, I went to a bunch of Chargers playoff games, which were pretty fun. I've been, you know, to a couple, you know, good NBA games and had a good experience there. So, but nothing I would say that kind of stands out above anything else as like end all be all the best. Right. Okay. I went to a couple Padres playoff games back in the day when they actually did that. Actually had a ticket to go to when they played the Yankees in the World Series, but was so violently ill that I couldn't go, which tells you something about how sick I really was. But I mean, they ended up losing anyway, so it didn't really matter, but, I got to watch it on TV at least. But so that, I mean, that would have been probably right up there if, you know, I went to an All-Star game when it was here in San Diego. So nothing that's, I would say, above anything else, but a lot of cool stuff, certainly.
Okay. So we'll just assume the granddaddy is above all those things.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially given our record.
I wouldn't know much about that.
Yeah. Well, your record is the only one that's better than mine.
Spotless. Yeah.
Yeah.
So granddaddy, we haven't talked about it at all. I know there's some feverish folks from THP listening in waiting to hear anything from Darth Finley himself about the granddaddy. Do we have any real 2022 updates right now for it?
That we're going to do it.
Yeah, that's a good start. I know we've got a few guys on the forum already locked into the event, and gal, actually,
yeah.
for that matter. But nothing that's kind of like a later in the year. Hey, yeah, it's September. We should probably look at this.
Post for me, right on my timeline. That's kind of a post sales meeting, you know, like fall ish time where we'll get kind of feverish on that and really start getting going. I mean, the basic template of it is there. Right. So it's, you know, I'm kind of thinking about stuff throughout the year and I have a folder that I'll send myself, you know, thoughts every once in a while, like that something will come to my mind, like, or I'll see something that seems cool, you know, somewhere and send it to myself. But yeah, I don't really get going on that until later in the year, just because there's too many other things right now that are, I don't want to say more important because some people would take that the wrong way, but are higher priority at this point in time.
Obligations, let's call it alternative obligations. So how early on in the office do the guys start sending you little thoughtful notes and reminders that they are, their game is coming into form and they need to be a part of the Zoo Crew?
I think it's more just the new people. You know, we're pretty much stable with, you know, I like to say the criteria for being on the team, right? Which is, you know, for me, it's product people. It's people that interact socially. So whether that's social people or people that are more active on the forums, those are the priorities. And, you know, as those positions ebb and flow a little bit, there may be some movement there, but that's generally the qualification. So once you get past those, there's not too many open spots there that are open. But yeah, there's subtle little digs here and there. And we have a new team member, and we did a 9-hole golf outing at Goat Hill, and I may have been responsible for the pairings. And I may have put him in my group just so I could, you know, check out his action a little bit, see if he was worthy. So
have you ever,
a little bit there.
Have you ever considered a play-in for the granddaddy? Like, you guys got to go and grind it out. I remember back in the day, there's all kinds of potential things that never really happened that stemmed from either bouts at the granddaddy or discussions that never came to fruition. Like a certain someone playing super game improvement irons, and you know, but have you ever considered like a legitimate plan, like make these guys grind it out to be a part of it?
No, because it's not about being the best player, right? It's about who's gonna represent the company well, be able to speak to the products, and who's gonna help have the help the group that's there for the event have the best time possible.
So we've all seen your record. We all know this is complete and utter nonsense. And there's a whole lot more going on behind it. I mean, you don't get Dart Finley for nothing, right? Oh, I can't get him to bite. We tried. Yeah.
I almost wrote that as my name on the screen here just to see if you liked it.
You know, it's funny. There's a lot of stuff going on in THP, but one of the common conversations that runs throughout the year is the intrigue and excitement for our granddaddy, and obviously we've got a number of years under our belt. I believe it started in 2013, I think was the inaugural year.
Yep.
And it's nice to think that we're closing in on a decade of this conversation, obviously changing and growing and becoming something truly special. But I'm eager to get you back on here to actually talk about what's to come for this year. It will surely unravel in a positive way, and I'm pumped for it, even though
I'm
on the sidelines.
I think, you know, like, you know, I joke about it that I don't really get started. I mean, we do talk about it, right? I've talked to Lay about dates potentially. We've talked about, you know, things we're going to do, and we generally know the week it is. It doesn't really change. It's kind of that first week of December. I think it just matters where kind of Thanksgiving falls within there and all that kind of matters a little bit, but generally speaking, it's in that window, and we'll start doing some of that, but from the nuts and bolts, and, you know, and it's a little more challenging with lead times on products and things like that now. And that continues to be something that, you know, we're thinking about and how we're going to handle that and what we're going to have, what we can get. And, you know, even on some of the swag kind of stuff, that's that's going to be a challenge for us. So we may need to get further ahead of it there, but you know, we'll figure it out. And we got, you know, Austin, who's on the performance gear side of things. So he can maybe help a little bit there too. So that's good as well.
The not so soft good side. Yeah, I got that. I have one final question before I let you go. And that is just generally speaking, from a golf ball perspective, how are things looking? How's the inventory going? Are you seeing a light at the end of the tunnel? Is it just a grind every day to populate?
I would say it's a grind every day. I think that, you know, the demand is clearly still there. And you know, I get the question from our customers all the time, like, do you think you're going to be in a better inventory position than you were last year? And I think we were better than just about everyone last year. But and I say I can't really answer that question because A, I don't know what demand's going to be. We don't know, you know, people are still playing golf. It's down a little bit year over year. You know, right about now is when the peak was last year for the golf industry. So but I also don't know the intricacies of everyone else's supply chain, right? I think we've been very, very, very well positioned with our supply chain to stay ahead of it, to the point where we haven't ever had to stop. We've been close, but we haven't ever had to stop making stuff, which I know plenty of others have been. So I think, you know, we're in a pretty good place, but I can't sit here and tell you that we don't have some SKUs that are back ordered.
Okay. Is there a point where, you know, thinking back maybe 5-10 years ago, it was always, who can we catch? And it seemed like the conversation on my side of it was, they're trying to catch this group. They're trying to catch this group, whether it's in woods, whether it's in balls, whatever it might be, irons. Is the focus way more right now about just getting that product available for consumers, or do you have your targets set on specific things?
Yes.
So it's both. The conversation is never
ceased. We want to be number one in every category that we play in, and okay, we're not number one in this category. So yes, that's what we want to do, and that's what we're gunning for, and that's my solo mission on the golf ball category.
Nice.
I think I have a pretty good idea of what it takes to get there, and that's what we're working towards.
I love it. So 2023 is going to be a big year.
Hopefully, yeah, I wouldn't sit here and tell you, I'm not arrogant enough to say that we're going to catch them in 2023.
Okay.
But that is on the radar.
I love it.
Yes.
What a good stopping point there, Jason. It's always a blast to have you on, my friend. Do you have any questions for me today?
I don't think so. I think, you know, no, maybe just make sure you don't like give too many secrets away, because that belt still looks pretty good in my office. I like having it there.
Yeah. I like pretty having tough. This scorecard here where I beat the alternative captain. And I don't think that's happened very often. So made sure to get that signature.
It happened this year.
Oh, that's true. That is true. Yeah. You're a bit scathed at this point.
Still bothered that chip didn't go in on that last hole.
You know, we all watched that and we all thought it was going in. I think the only one who didn't think it was going in might have been you at one point. Even you look like you were convinced. That was crazy. What a ride. But so I guess that means this year you're out for blood. You're out for a good time, but you're out for blood. Is that true?
Oh, I want to win. Don't get me wrong. And we had a great match, right? I mean, there was no two ways about it. I mean, you drummed Harry, so that wasn't even a match, really. I can say that now that he's not my boss anymore, but you full-blown kicked his rear end.
It was a good one, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that we had a good match, and it was kind of back and forth, and there's no quit in this fella, I'll tell you that, right? I'm not going to quit there.
Well, there were definitely folks who had you counted out. I was watching, listening, reading, whatever on the forum, seeing the videos being posted by our buddy Neil X Thor trying to break the hideaway. But yeah, the shaking heads from Jason Findlay. But yeah, it was really fun to follow down the stretch, and you did as you would expect, and you showed up, and
yeah, I seem to recall
almost covered.
There may be somebody on this podcast that may have suggested that I was going to go 0-3.
I typically would, yeah. Yeah. Well, here's the problem. I have nothing to gain from supporting your group from a win-loss record. Like, you got to take the underdog at this point. The story is in
the next winner. We all know who that is.
The story is in the next winner, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, at some point it'll happen again.
I'm so sick of that belt being at your office or wherever it is right now, being mistreated and, you know, disrespected on a daily basis.
Well, I might need to go give it a little dusting because it's been there for so long, you know, that
see,
might have collected a little dust.
Yeah, I just think you're a little too comfortable with it. So, yeah. Hibbler, you know, you got big expectations from Canadan this year. And Finley's not backing down as per usual. It's going to be a challenge. So
no backing down out of this one.
Yeah. Well, Jason, have an awesome summer. I appreciate you. Best of luck. And for those of you out there, once again, that's Jason Finley at Jason Finley CG on Twitter. Go give him a shout out. Tell him which Chrome soft you like to play. Tell him why it's the LS, because it's a great ball. And try out some Callaway products. If you're playing golf this weekend, have a great time. Make it count, and we'll chat with you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.